We're both all recording. Right, recording. I'm recording. You're recording. We're all recording.
Indeed. So I'm getting fired up.
Good, 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 good. Let's do it.
I was thinking about the value of creative skills, of art skills versus traditional academic skills, right? To me, these are not mutually exclusive things. And I think it's an unfortunate false dichotomy that we have set up as a society or whatnot. And oftentimes it comes up, we're like, what's the value? Who cares if you can draw, right? If you, you're drawing, sometimes that's akin to watching something pleasing or playing a game or whatever. It doesn't launch spaceships and put food in people's mouths and that
kind
of stuff.
What a fun and trivial life you lead.
Ugh. Dude, high school art taught me to see.
Yeah.
Beat that, right? Beat that, any skill, okay?
Yeah.
Perception and the ability to process information and have distinction between all I can participate more with my visual world, which of course it depends on what kind of what kind of senses you're naturally born with or have or possess currently and whatnot. The skill applies to all your senses. Your ability to make distinction among all the data that you're surrounded with. And when I was in high school art, and the teacher was teaching me about the value of value, right? To where all of a sudden, we were doing a lot of things that were just shaded exercises and whatnot, and then maybe copying an image or whatever. And then all of a sudden, how do you copy an image when you're trying to break out of what the symbol is? Just look at the raw information that's there. And now you're sifting through the relative differences based on what's currently in that information, and you're discovering and you're perceiving, and that's way badass.
Yeah.
And when it hit me, I'm like, wow, okay. And just recently I reflected on that. I was all reflecty because I listened to a book probably too much in one go, but it was the Daniel H. Pink, To Sell as Human. And also, I actually listened to one of his talks, which has some similar ideas in it. Essentially, Daniel H. Pink, he started life as whatever. He went off to be a lawyer, right? In his young adulthood, became a speech writer eventually for political candidates and all that stuff. And he slowly went down this more and more creative path. And he has some interesting talks, I was really wrestling with it with his one. It's called A Whole New Mind. And that's what got me thinking about this, where he's really pitching that the valuable skills in the 21st century are the ones that we weren't valuing that much in the prior century. And he's just making his case for it. And then just got me pondering anyway. And then all of a sudden I just realized, well, hey, wait a minute. Art taught me to see. And that's
awesome.
Yeah.
I got an observation to throw in on this. This is kind of meta content.
Cool. Groovy.
You always finish these rants with whatever. I'm done. And I don't want to go any further than that.
I throw my mic down and won't stomp away.
That's my Rob impersonation of the
day. Kick a chair.
And whatever. You know, I'm so used to having this fall flat on an audience that I'm just not going to go any further than that. I said my piece. I'm done.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm mischaracterizing it, but.
No, you're right.
But two things.
You don't give a crap anyway. Bah.
Yeah. 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 Which is defeatist talk first.
I know it is. I'm pissed at myself now. Thank you, Drew.
That was the idea. But now, okay, now that I made you pissed at yourself, here's my second observation. There is nothing better than a well-spoken and thoughtful, angry human being, because they are going to flip you on your butt and make you rethink what you're thinking, right? Anybody can get angry. And anybody can think hard. But if you can think hard, get angry about it, and articulate that clearly, that is some magic, magic mojo. And so this is my challenge to you, Rob, and I'm going to put this out to any of the people who listen to the Extra Lean Show, is please kick Rob in the butt to say, when you feel that way, go there. go there, A, get it out of your system. It's cathartic. B, it's incredibly invigorating to hear somebody speak on your behalf in that way. That's what makes a leader.
Well, thanks. That's very kind of you. And I do welcome such butt kicking. So
yeah, quit being such a GD defeatist. When you're mad about that, you get to be mad about that. And what's more is it's fun to listen to you be mad about that, not in any kind of like silly, like fight sidelines kind of nonsense, but in the sense of, no, but seriously, in the sense of, heck yeah, yeah, you know? We need people to get like that. One of my favorite online personalities is, well, I shouldn't say favorite. He's a favorite. I like his thoughts a lot, but I disagree with him on a lot of things. But what I love about the guy is his sense of vigor and intensity, and the fact that he, when he commits to something, he goes all the way with it, is Jeff Jarvis. And he's one of the hosts of the This Week in Google show. But I discovered him through that show, because of all of the Twitch shows, that was my favorite, because it tended to get very philosophical at times, which I thought was more interesting than just talking about which phone am I going to get. But I've since started to follow him in other places to just follow along with his writings. And he just gets really fired up about stuff, and not always stuff that I care about, or sometimes he takes a different position than what I would take on it. But what I admire about the guy is his conviction, his passion, and his determination, and with a complete lack of sophistry. You know, even if you disagree with the man, you can't argue that he hasn't thought his stuff through. And when somebody comes at him with a counter argument, if it's a good one, he'll go, you know what? I reconsider. Or if he still disagrees with you, we disagree. It never turns into like, you know, what do they call that? Ad hominem attacks. Like, well, what have you done? Show me what you did, butthole. You know, and that nonsense. But what I love about the guy is he's a
I was going to say that to you, actually. No, I'm kidding. That's,
But anyway, my point is...
No, that's cool. Please continue. I'm excited. That's really neat you brought up Jeff Jarvis. That's all. I haven't listened to him in a while, but I don't know. You're giving me a positive outlet for my anger.
He wrote a marvelous piece on trolls. He's writing for Medium now. Medium's that Twitter offshoot. Have you heard about that Medium?
No.
What is it? Let me check. It's not medium.com, is it? I'm looking. It might be. Yeah, medium.com. It was created by the folks who made Twitter, and it's a blogging platform that I still haven't quite wrapped my brain around what it is, but it's a writing platform that is supposed to be like elegant and simple, and it's like, well, why can't you just use a Blogspot? I still haven't figured that out yet. What difference it has from any other content management system, but it's kind of blogging with the Twitter aesthetic of stripped down, just the text, no embedded pictures, no rich media, just words.
Interesting.
And you can sign up for an account through your Twitter account. But
it's called what now?
Medium, as in medium volume, medium heat, the medium through which you communicate.
Medium.com, huh?
Yeah, medium.com. I wonder how much they paid for that.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably a substantial amount.
But anyway, so I've been following his writing on there, and he wrote this just a lovely piece on trolls and trying to define what a troll is. And it's nerdy stuff, and it's silly stuff. And it's also a little bit of like school marm call to action stuff. Like when you see, you know, somebody being a troll, it's, you know, we got to think, should we call them out on it? Should we, you know, by not acting when you see injustice happening, you then have to ask yourself, what kind of world am I fostering? So too, should you think of your interactions online? And he's not saying that the attackee should necessarily get involved, but that the bystanders should get involved and say, is that really how you want to, you know, have this discourse, you know, with that kind of talk? But anyway,
exactly.
But to my original point, it's just that I think that, you know, I am not... I think many people would guess this about me. I'm not a big fan of anger per se. Useful anger and anger with a clear message behind it, a sense of outrage or a sense of incredulity, well spoken from a place of passion, I think is incredibly useful. And I have nothing but crazy respect for people who can do that. What I don't respect is when somebody just blusters. Just dumb. That's all. Just dumb, you know?
Sure.
And you never do that. So I think more than many people, you are entitled to express your anger. Because I know you're going to do it. You're going to do it responsibly, right?
Yeah. Well, that's thanks. I anger can be incredibly destructive,
yes.
You know, and one of the best things I ever learned in school, like besides being able to see in art class, was is a very simple thing in health. Two simple things I learned out of health class. I mean, besides, you know, why your voice is changing and all that stuff. it was like a good outlet for I don't know, exuberance. And I think they actually said when you get frustrated and stuff is go work out. Right. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay, that's a good idea. And so I did that a lot in my teens. And I also had some really simple advice for sleep. And they said sleep was really important. And I've had a weird relationship with sleep, you know, off and on over the years, but I've always been able to when I wanted to go sleep. Mm-hmm. And it's, I just credit that. So anyway, that's stay in school, kids. Even if it sucks.
Most of the time it's pretty okay. Mm. But
anyway.
So yeah.
So what's up with you, Jersey? Yeah, that was fun. I think that's, you know, we went around the whole topic there, but
yeah, we did. We did.
I don't want to click the stop button yet.
No, we should let topics naturally go their course, and mm-hmm. then if there's still time, do another one, right? Rather than, you know, oh well, let's just stop early, or let's try to milk whatever we can out of the thing. Gosh, I don't have anything. I had some different observations, but now they're slipping me because I got so wrapped up in this Daniel H. Pink to sell as human and you getting mad.
what do you, okay. If you, I'm curious what you think about, I don't want to cut you off if you have something, but I am really curious about your thoughts on what do you go through when you need to do self-promotion and self-marketing and all that kind of stuff? I would imagine it's like an interesting mix of stuff.
Are you talking about internally, like emotionally?
Like or? Just internally, like how do you deal with that idea? And just the skill of marketing, is it something that you've embraced or shunned or have hot and cold relationship with? Or just what do you think of?
What do I think of marketing?
Yeah.
Gosh, it's, I'm not sure where I stand on it right now. I feel like I'm getting over let me mark this, facing the, I'm writing this down so I won't forget it. The anti-Jersey. I faced the anti-Jersey this past week. That was one of the things I had written down. But this kind of ties into it. Mm. There's an expression that runs something along the lines of, it's unseemly to blame your parents for your problems after the age of 27. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah, I've heard things like it. Not that quote. It's
But I'm not saying that this is necessarily something I subscribe to. You know, everybody mm-hmm. has different lives. Everybody has different situations. But related to that, I think there comes a point if you are making stuff where it mm-hmm. is unseemly for you to say, it's obnoxious for me to tell anybody about it. And what I mean by that is that there's a natural reluctance to want to say or to say publicly, hey, look at the thing I did, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm getting to a point in my life where I'm beginning to detect the difference between saying, hey, everybody, look at me, and look at this lovely thing I made. right? Because I think that reluctance comes out, at least for me, it came out of a sense of, well, I don't want to be a show off. I don't want to be, and man, people talk about this online all the time, the humble brag, right? Hey, I got mentioned in an article. Check it out. Humble brag. First of all, I don't think there's anything shameful in being excited about something that you are associated with. As a matter of fact, that's kind of where we should be, right? Mm-hmm. We should feel like whatever we're involved in is something we're excited about and want to tell other people about, shouldn't we? I mean, should we want to push everything we do under a blanket, you know? And I get humility, and I get, you know, the Taoist principle of not wanting to overexert your specialness, right? But at the same time, if you're, I think that there's room in life, or at least for me, of being happy and excited to be associated with something and wanting to tell everybody that you know about it. Like Carl Sagan once said, when you're in love, you want to tell the whole world about it. And he's like, that's his answer. That was his answer to when somebody said, why do a TV show on science? But I think my reluctance came out of the fact that I was associating the self-promotion as being promoting me, Jersey Drozd. And so, you know, someone once said to me recently, actually, that they don't get a sense from my shows, like the Comics Are Great show, of what I do, like what books I do, because I never talk about them on my show. And I said, well, that's because, because the Comics Are Great show is not about me, it's about comics. I'm there to facilitate a discussion on comics. It's celebrating my love of comics. So I'm not going to insert a whole lot of self-promotional plugs. But that is kind of a reflex out of, and I'm not saying I'm changing the Comics Are Great show at all, but I'm just saying like part of that I think was an instinctual reflex of this whole, let's divert attention away from me. Let's make me vanish, right? And this is something you've kind of wrapped me on the nose about in the past, is how I want to disappear into the background and let the thing live on its own. But I'm beginning to detect the difference between being proud of a thing and being overly excited about me. If that makes any sense. And I think that's helping me define how to promote something that I did. As far as like current implementation, it's a time thing. I've been really bogged down with deadlines. Life happened to throw me a curveball recently. Nothing to get excited about, just that, you know, family, wife gets sick, you know, that takes over your time. So I haven't been as attentive to the internet as I typically am, but I'm getting caught up again. So, and then when that happens, I'll be doing a lot more blasts about, hey, look at the thing I made. Look at the thing I'm doing. I don't know if I even came close to answering your question.
No, I recommend reading that book, audiobook or whatever. If you remember, Audible, things well worth your time.
I've because heard I think about it.
It's a, obviously he has strong biases, but you don't have to absorb them. And it's not about just, you know, be drinking this specific Kool-Aid, but it's the, he does share his thought process and how he comes up with his conclusions along the way quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And it makes it for multiple layers of interesting food for thought on a topic that is for, I would say, most people who aren't either primarily public speakers or public entertainers, or if you aren't a mogul of any sort, I think a lot of it is essentially if you're a worker bee of any kind or like a, or anywhere along the spectrum that even points slightly toward that. I think a lot of us get, have a hard time figuring out how to sell what we do.
Yeah.
And it just applies in a lot of situations, whether it's a project that you're working on that you love, or you're looking to land a client to, you know, engage in trade. You're like, you want to sell your illustration skills or whatever design skills, you know, for me, user experience, game design, whatever. I mean, it's a thing. You have a thing or a skill, and how you put that out there in the world, and how you essentially sell. I mean, it's an important thing. I think it ties into like storytelling. I think it ties into having a clear idea of the value of what you do and putting yourself into the, what it's like to be a customer of yours and all that. Really, really helpful stuff that that book happens to be, you know, a really good introduction to a whole bunch of those perspectives. And I have a hard time with it. I go through various stages trying to figure out how do I present myself and what I'm working on. I don't know.
Like I've got the persona part licked, and like as far as like who do I represent as me, right? What's my representational voice online? But then the next part of saying, how do I communicate how that's valuable is another thing altogether, right?
Exactly. Yeah, very true.
A student of mine came up to me at the end of, I just finished my graphic novel academy at the Art Center, 8-week course. And the student comes up to me at the end and says, my mom said that you're the happiest guy she's ever seen, that you're happier than anybody has a right to be. And the first part of the sentence, I'm like, oh, that's a very nice thing to hear. And then the second part was like, hey, that sounds like she's insulting me or like she's complaining about me. But you know, I mean, and Dan Mishkin has said, you know, it's like, well, when we were sussing out like different responsibilities for kids read comics, he's like, Jersey, you take this because this is kind of a public facing part and your sunny personality will give the best representation of what we want to say. So like, I feel like I got that part figured out. Not that it's any way concocted. You can attest to this, Rob, that the way I'm behaving now is pretty close to my natural state. But then the hard part is how can I tie that into, you know, without resorting to trickery, this is why this has this kind of value, right?
Yeah, I mean, and it's honestly, it's just another design problem. I mean, and it's just the one that we're not as often comfortable with because we don't typically have the motivation to seek out those results, because I think the act of doing the creative stuff is so damn satisfying to a lot of us that we feel complete. Yeah. And that's not the whole job. No matter what you're working on, if it really is a fully solo project or whatever, it's an important, really, really important part of the job. And, but yet not complete.
I think you characterized it really well. It's like, I think about when I was talking with Greg Schiegel on the Comics Are Great show, and he works on the SpongeBob comics. And I was just talking about how, like, wow, that's like a dream job for me, like working on a beloved children's character. And he's like, yeah, but the problem is that I don't have any of my own properties that I've invested years into. So I have like a series of books behind me that are mine. He's like, I got all this SpongeBob stuff and that's awesome, but I don't have anything that's mine. And I'm like, well, why is that? Let's get to the bottom of this. What's going on here? Is it that, you know, you don't have the time? Is it a time issue? Is it a burnout issue? And he's like, no, it's a situation where my day job is so satisfying that I feel like when 5 o'clock rolls around and I finish my work as a cartoonist is done. I'm a professional cartoonist. I don't have anything left to prove. And so it's a motivational thing where he's, you know, the satisfaction meter is up all the way. So there's nothing pushing him to that art desk to make a new thing. And so too, when you finish a work and you're like, I showed it to my friends, I got a bunch of thumbs ups. I don't need to come up with the extra mile of figuring out how to present this thing as a valuable thing. Right.
I think you just nailed the weakness in the webcomic strategy overall. And it's that, you can clear a certain hurdle, and it's an important one to get to, because I wasn't able to clear it for a while. And I, you know, I found that very valuable exercise to be able to, you know, consistently share a webcomic. But then there's a lot of satisfaction and rigmarole and even ritual that can feel good enough where, oh, okay, I've been, you know, consistently publishing however many days a week, and I get the feedback, and people do acknowledge it, people do share it and all that, and that is super important, and I don't mean to devalue it,
Yeah.
It is just incomplete because part of someone who is doing that to engage in trade is going to say, okay, now where's the funding coming from? How are you making this sustainable? Yeah. And there are different situations and depends on the goal of you have for the project. And it's why I've like sideburned a bunch of my different stuff because they don't contribute to, making enough money or what have you. And I think that is a really freaking hard set of choices to make. And I'm exploring the path. I don't have Daniel H. Pink level refined answers to share or whatnot, but it seems like I am gravitating toward projects now that I'm able to be creatively satisfied with and to, possibly make money with, et cetera, more so than staying with that other approach. So
I'm going to have to read this book. I just found it in the Google Play Store. I'm also going to see if I can get it from the library.
Cool.
Yeah, Daniel.
Interesting dude.
And like I said, I've been hearing about this book in a lot of other places. So this guy's onto something, apparently. And I would read it just for your recommendation or by your recommendation alone. But just to underscore what you said, yeah, I have been hearing a lot about it. So
cool. Additional information to provide, not to disclaim it. It's an interesting ride in that there are. I think it's in a way he's trying to show you any of those dark things that you've associated with sales. And then there's still some of those things you may still be associating with the dark side of sales that he then goes into then teaching you. There was just partway through the book where I was like, I have such mixed feelings right now. Very interesting.
Isn't that exactly the moment where, God, that's going to sound like a hippie thing, but that's like where the moment where the real learning happens, right?
The moment where when you're in that uncomfortable zone where this is, I'm not just feeling great with these tidbits that were so easy to consume. Yeah. And like, I can see how to apply this, but no, now this is harder to fully understand, slightly scary and stressful because it just seems like, what is that just going to make me into some kind of sales stereotype that I really don't respect,
Right. Right. No, that's the best feeling in the world, man. And I'm gonna have to dog ear this for a future discussion, but this ties into my observation from last week of facing the anti-jersey. I came up against a couple different comics projects that were almost as if, I could have come up with those. It sounded like on paper, it sounds like, oh, of course Jersey came up with that. And then I got up close to him and it wasn't like what I would do. And then it made me confront a lot of really interesting and difficult questions where I was like, am I not what I thought I was? Because when I look at it from the outside, it looks like this. Or B, have I outgrown this thing that I've defined myself with for X amount of time? And I'm grappling with it. And the best part of all is I don't know. I don't know the answer yet. And I know it's going to take me months to unravel this thing. I got this big knotted ball of yarn in front of me. And it's going to be so much fun trying to figure out what's at the center of that thing, And in the meantime, I'm going to have to confront a lot of really uncomfortable possible truths in as I unspool it, right?
Mm. Yeah, that is exciting and scary.
I've never done that though and said, oh, I wish I hadn't done that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's
same here. About,
so.
Super cool.
All right.
Well, what do you think? That was funny. So you actually gave us like the bullet points of that too. So I look forward to coming back to that. I don't know. It's fascinating that the anti jersey, is that what you said?
It was something where from a distance I looked at it and was like, wow, that's like something I would have come up with. And then I got up close and then I realized that it was like, the Mirror World episode of Star Trek where Spock has the facial hair. And so I got up close and was like, oh, this isn't me at all. This is like, if I subscribe to a lot of things that I you know, deeply disagree with. but from a distance, and if you squint, it looks like me. But then you get up close, and it's the me who thinks that kids are really terrible.
So when you planted an awesome thing to look forward to, and exciting, scary, who knows thing. And let's see, I kind of have another one where now, how about reflecting on or integrating with that when you need to work with that person?
When I need to work with them.
So you're in a situation where, okay, you have a client and the client has other people providing solutions, and now you're all working on a solution together or whatever, right? A project. And sometimes teams are made up of mixed personalities that can be pretty divergent. Anyway, just thought I'd plant that one too. Why not? Yeah,
that's outside of my comfort zone too. All right. Mm-hmm. All right. Keep cool. spinning the challenges at me, Rob.
All right. And you too, Jersey.
Extra lean.
All right.